Welcome to Co-op Radio 102.7 FM CFRO. This is Monday Brown Bagger. The date is April 13th, 2009. My name is Reginald Angusarcu. I have my co-host Tanya Hill in the studio with me today. Before we begin with our first guest, what happened was, is so far Monday Brown Bagger, we've had a chance to interview Sakura Sanders from protestbarrack.net. We've talked to the Western Shoshone Nation about what the Barrack Gold has done on their land. And also, I've had a chance to read the report from the Western Shoshone Nation, which talks about how the trans-Canadian corporations are tearing that land apart down there and not adhering to first to human rights. So what we're doing is we're going to continue on to talk about the injustices that lead right back to Barrack Gold, right into Peter Munk, who now has an Order of Canada, right over to Harper, because Mrooney is involved with Barrack Gold, and Mrooney is Harper's mentor. And we also have to remember that Peter Munk has the ear of Mr. Harper. Also, Barrack Gold being the biggest gold company in the world, You're talking about tremendous amount of control that one company has. Also, we're going to have our guest to talk about how there's an awful lot of mining companies that are registered here in Canada. But with that said, we now have as a guest William Sakura, who is the co-author of Noir Canada. He was telling me there's about 8 different authors who researched this book. Not only are the authors facing a lawsuit in Quebec because of this book, being put out, their publisher is also facing the exact same lawsuit. And to me, I find that to be against freedom of speech. With that said, hello, William.
Hello.
Well, thank you so much for agreeing to come on.
And my pleasure.
Could you quickly tell our listening audience, you put this book out, you did tremendous research. Could you talk about the research you did and how you compiled the information?
All right. Yeah. Well, first, thank you for inviting me on your radio. And I just wanted to apologize in front of your audience if I'm making some hesitation sometimes, because English is not my mother language. So anyway, so Noir Canada, which you can translate as gloomy Canada or black Canada, which subtitle is pillage, corruption et criminalité en Afrique, which means plundering, criminality and corruption in Africa. Basically, what we have done with this book, we have started from questioning, and our questioning was that, is this myth of a good guy that Canada is enjoying pretty much inside and outside its border, is that myth founded? Because what we had noticed before going through our research is that there were some indices that abroad Canada didn't have the same reputation that actually I would say usually the governmental propaganda is selling to Canadian citizens and people around the world. So what we have done is we have tried to gather documents talking about Canadian interest in Africa. We have been concentrated on this continent, and what we have collect is numerous documents, usually independence documents, which were actually reporting numerous allegations of abuses that Canadian private companies would have done on the African continent. So our sources are basically, a United Nations report, big NGO reports such as Amnesty International, Global Witness, Human Rights Watch. We have also based our research on the parliamentary commissions, on governmental sources, on academic works, on the works of recognized specialists of Africa, on the international press. So all these sources together, we have basically more than 1,000 references in our book, and we have basically gathered many types of abuses that private companies have been accused of. It comes from pollution of ecosystem, contamination of ecosystem, and poisoning of population close to mining areas, to corruption, to political ingerence, financial criminality or even financing of warlords in the Democratic Republic of Congo, which is, a country which have known a civil conflict for about 15 years now. And it's a conflict that it's usually presented as an ethnic one. But in fact, what we are observing is that there are a lot of foreign interests which are actually behind the local powers. And we are also, we are also talking about massive tax evasions, about brutal expropriations of people who were actually living on areas where containing a rich deposit of mineral of oil or oil, like all these sort of abuses. So that's the starting point of our research, and the main point, the key point, basically, is that what we have exposed through our analysis is that it exists a sort of Canadian exploitation system of natural resources of Africa and, I would say, other continents such as Latin America, but also anywhere else in the world. And actually, this system is based on three components, three main components. The first one is the relative impunity these companies are actually enjoying here in Canada when they're registered here in Canada. The second one is the permissive regulations of the Toronto Stock Exchange, which provides a very convenient frame for this company when they are registered at this stock exchange. And the third one is actually the support, the multiform support these companies are receiving from the Canadian government. So the whole system is at work, and many, many companies from outside Canada are actually using Canada as a platform to plunder, basically, natural resources from abroad. So that's why, and I finished on that, that's why we have suggest that somehow Canada is a judicial paradise for mining companies in the world.
Well, according to the, I was talking to a lawyer recently, and he was saying, according to the, not only the Canadian Constitution, but the Bill of Rights, the Charter of Rights and Freedoms, even the British North American Act, every single Canadian that lives in Canada that owns, thinks that they own a house, guess what? You don't own that house. The Crown owns everything. So that basically shows if a country is based on the fact that its citizens do not own their own land, then what it's done is it, just as you're talking about, it's created this atmosphere for the corruption to exist. So when can we expect this novel to be available in English so that we're able to read it and also be able to find out more about what's going on that you're reporting about?
Actually, so far, there is no, I'd say, intention to pass the content of the book in English. Well, basically what happened is that we haven't found any English publisher so far. So we would be pleased to hear a proposition from English-speaking publisher, which would actually translate our book, but so far we haven't. So that's the point where we are. And actually, what happens is that, as you were mentioning, we are involved in two cases of libel lawsuits. One in Quebec, intended by as you were mentioning, Barry Gold, and a second one in Ontario, launched by Banro Corporation, for a total of $11 million. So they are accusing us of defamation. So when you have a book which is loaded by such immense weight, I mean, you can imagine that it dissuades people from being interested in translating it or publishing it.
Are you able to talk a little bit more about the lawsuit?
Yeah, sure. Of course.
I'm just wondering. What you're saying? They're suing you on grounds of defamation, or they think false claims.
That's right.
And so, how is this affecting you financially? You're having to hire lawyers?
Yeah, of course. Mm-hmm. Well, actually, this is a very a big issue that we have raised with this book. Besides all the issues that the book itself raises, is the issue of access to justice. Because what happens is that we are sued by two multinational companies, which basically have huge financial means, and they are, you know, they are hiring, you know, armies of lawyers, and they can afford that. Whereas ourselves, basically, we have to count on lawyers that are, that are. I don't have the word in English, but they are, well, they basically have worked for us on a voluntary basis.
Right, pro bono.
Yeah, pro bono lawyers. And we have the chance to have that because without our pro bono lawyers, we have two teams in Ontario and Quebec. We wouldn't have been able to struggle in this judicial case as far as we are now. I mean, like we received the two lawsuits last year. Actually, we received them in April and June of last year, and we would have gone to bankruptcy. The three main authors who are sued, and the publisher who was actually sued also, and all of us would have gone to bankruptcy, you know, very, very soon, because struggling in such a judicial case involved a huge cost in lawyers' salaries.
Are you going to have to prove in court point by point that what you're saying in your book is true?
Actually, the thing is that we don't pretend anything we are saying is true, because what happens is that we have gathered public documents which were already available, you know, on the web, or, you know, documentary movies, or in books, and all these public documents had been the results of, you know, previous investigation made by people, most of them on the ground. So personally, we haven't been on the ground. We have just gathered all these documents, and none of these sources had been sued before. So what we have done is we have just said, all right, okay, these allegations exist. This allegation exists. Well, it is true that some companies, when they have publicly reacted, they have denied. But what we have been concentrated on is the fact that, you know, they are persistent allegations of abuses. So that's why the only thing we are calling for is, you know, an independent investigation to actually shed light on all these cases, which are really, really problematic from a citizen perspective, because many like all Canadians are basically made complicit of this exploitation, because we are financing these companies through our pension funds and even through our taxpayers' money. So that's basically the point. We are not saying anything is true. We don't know where the truth is, and it's not our role to say what the truth is.
Yeah, we did an interview with Richard Sanders, who he's actually the founder of COAT, Coalition Opposed the Arms Trade, mm-hmm. and he talked about how the Canadian pension plan is being used at this time to fund the making of components for weapons of mass destruction that have been used over in Gaza, been used over in Lebanon, and been used over in Iraq too, and how Canada has played a major role in actually supplying weapon and ammunition for United States for the Iraqi war. Yeah. So what happens is, to all the Canadians out there that think that we didn't have any part in Iraq, guess again, we had a major part in Iraq. And everyone that accepts that Canadian pension plan right now, just think that the money you're getting paid is basically made off the spilling of innocent blood of children in another country. That you're nothing more. You actually, technically, they could actually say that by collecting the money, they could be their benefiting off of war crimes in another nation. You could actually say that. That's what I would say. That's my humble opinion. But we also had a chance to talk to Richard about how it involved tobacco companies and other companies, as you're talking about. the one in Tanzania is Barrick Gold is coming after you for that one, the one allegation in Tanzania where 50 people were killed. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Well, of course, what happened is that what we are exposing in the book is the fact that you have persistent allegations of brutal expropriation from a group of artisanal miners, which were present on a very interesting gold deposit in Tanzania in 1996. And it was not even, Barrick Gold was not even involved at that time because it was Sutton Resources, which was actually a Vancouver registered junior mining company. And this company has been accused of mobilizing the police forces to actually brutally expropriate the people. And there have been allegations of artisanal and miner being buried alive during the process by using the company's bulldozers. Well, Barrick Gold has balked the companies after that in 1999, and since that time there has been many activists in Tanzania which were actually talking about these allegations, because many people were complaining about this event. And there were a few investigations done on that. There is a very interesting document which were published by the students' Toronto University newspaper, which is called The Men Who Moil for Gold, which is a very comprehensive investigation around that case. It's available on the web. And actually, Barrick has always pretended that these allegations were not founded. It was purely false. I mean, that's their opinion. That's okay. But on the other side, you have a lot of people from there, from Tanzania, that are still complaining about these allegations. And recently, the Norwegian government, which have actually divested $200 million from its pension fund from Barrick, actually reported that they were taking seriously the allegations of miners being buried alive during this brutal expropriation in 1996. So, I mean, our point of view is that, well, there is nothing completely irrelevant in that. If we raise these issues and this problem, it just worth to be investigated more, seriously by an independent investigation, committee.
You're saying, the Canadian government is in some way or another involved with this company. Can you tell me how do they distance themselves from the actions of Barrick Gold?
How do they distance themselves? Like,
because they seem to be able to kind of say that they are not responsible for the actions of this company.
I've never seen personally such statements. What I can say is that there have been also allegations of, for instance, in the case of Tanzania, of this particular case of the Bunyaluru mine, there have been allegations of very strong lobbying, which would have done the Canadian High Commissioner in Tanzania for the Tanzanian government to actually clean up the area where you had artisan and miner present and extracting their gold on an artisanal basis. And this is very disturbing for companies which are registered on Canadian stock markets And, you know, they see that some people are actually imprisoned on the cassation they have acquired through, you know, a legal system which have actually been imposed, for instance, through the World Bank, through the World Bank initiative. But so you have like strong diplomatic support from the Canadian government. In, you know, in Tanzania, it's an example, but you also have we also have reports of other countries which where actually the government of Canada provides a diplomatic support to any type of Canadian interest present on the ground. Well, this is not the only support this private interest received from Canada, from the government of Canada. I mean, there are also here strong incentives, you know, with regard to tax credits, for instance. You also have an agency such as Exportation Development Canada, which provides investment guarantees to these companies. You also have the Canadian International Development Agency, which sometimes directly finance private projects through the so-called TID aid, you know, this type of aid which actually never leaves Canada, which goes from the government pocket to private companies' bank accounts. And so that's pretty much the way. I forget about some other supports. I mean, like they are multiform, but that's some examples of, you know, like the way the government of Canada is providing a strong support to this interest investing abroad.
Yeah, and with that said, William, we're going to take a quick station break, and we ask you to remain on the phone, and then we'll come back with you in a couple minutes. This is Co-op Radio 102.7 FM CFRO Monday Brown Bagger, and we're going to take a quick break, and we ask the listening audience just to stay tuned.
And you're saying, the Canadian government is in some way or another involved with this company. Can you tell me how do they distance themselves from the actions of Barrick Gold?
How do they distance themselves?
Because they seem to be able to kind of say that they are not responsible for the actions of this company.
I've never seen personally such statements. What I can say is that there have been also allegations of, for instance, in the case of Tanzania, of this particular case of the Bunyaluru mine, there have been allegations of very strong lobbying, which would have done the Canadian High Commissioner in Tanzania for the Tanzanian government to actually clean up the area where you had artisan and miner present and, you know, extracting their gold on an artisanal basis. And this is very disturbing for companies which are registered on Canadian stock markets. And, you know, they see that some people are actually imprisoned on the cassation they have acquired through, you know, a legal system which have actually been imposed, for instance, through the World Bank, through the World Bank initiative. But so you have like strong diplomatic support from the Canadian government. In, you know, in Tanzania, it's an example, but you also have we also have reports of other countries which where actually the government of Canada provides a diplomatic support to any type of Canadian interest present on the ground. Well, this is not the only support this private interest received from Canada, from the government of Canada. I mean, there are also here strong incentives, with regard to tax credits, for instance, you also have an agency such as Exportation Development Canada, which provides investment guarantees to these companies. You also have the Canadian International Development Agency, which sometimes directly finance private projects through the so-called TIED aid. You know, this type of aid which actually never leaves Canada, which goes from the government pocket to private companies' bank accounts. And so that's pretty much the way. I forget about some other supports. I mean, like they are multiform, but that's some examples of the way the government of Canada is providing a strong support to this interest investing abroad.
Yeah, and with that said, William, we're going to take a quick station break, and we ask you to remain on the phone, and then we'll come back with you in a couple of minutes. This is Co-op Radio 102.7 FM CFRO Monday Brown Bagger, and we're going to take a quick break, and we ask the listening audience just to stay tuned. William, we now had Jorge Lopendia has joined us, and he's facing a lawsuit himself from Brian Maroney and Barrick Gold. And just to give you a brief history on Mr. Lopendia, Jorge is the legal owner of Minipaska Lama. Minipaska Lama is the third biggest gold reserve in the world, which Barrick Gold tried to illegally acquire for $20. And finally, the Chilean court system has recognized Mr. Lopendia as a legal owner. So he is going through what you guys are going through at this time. And what happens is, with that said, Jorge, could you quickly talk about, share a little bit with William and our listening audience what you've experienced yourself, and maybe you can give William some advice?
Thanks for inviting me here, Rich, and thanks for having William in the other line. For William and the rest of the audience and the listening audience, libel seems to be an instrument used by the powerful to shut off dissent, to quash the truth, to extend the holidays of the crimes, and sometimes to condemn innocent people. An example of libel. Greenpeace wrote an article on the mines in Tanzania, and Greg Palast got sued by Barrick Gold Corporation. Another instance of libel. Brian Maroney was taking money in paper bags down to the U.S. The RCMP wanted to sue, and Brian Maroney sued for libel. Another case, Blanchard. Blanchard came out after it picked up where GATA left off. GATA is the Gold Antitrust Action Committee. And Blanchard sued J.P. Morgan and Barrick Gold Corporation for conspiring to rig gold prices. Despite of the fact that under oath, Barrick admitted to have rig gold prices on behalf of certain central banks of the world, and therefore was seeking immunity from prosecution. In Canada, Barrick sued for libel Blanchard. So Blanchard settled in the United States for billions of dollars days after the M3 publishing of the money records was shut off. And in Canada, Blanchard pleaded guilty of the libel with a slap in the hand. In my case, the libel is more significant and is more critical. I was made a symbol of internet libel in Canada. I was made a symbol of internet libel in Canada for daring to say that in Chile, Barrick Gold Corporation lost ownership of the largest asset filed with the Securities and Exchange Commission. Here, I am persecuted. I was trampled in the courts. I did never attend any proceedings, and I was found guilty of libel. Today, in Canada, Barrick Gold Corporation continues to state that they own my mine, sold in advance billions of dollars of gold from my mine to Deutsche Bank, and I have a judicial decision in 2001 to strip ownership of that mine by a cease and embargo. In 2006, a judgment favorable. Barrick was not happy with the text of the judgment because the lady judge just tossed the book in the kitchen sink on them. And the corporation had the audacity to sue the judge so that the lady could be removed from the Chilean court system and the judgment would go haywire upside down. Through the wisdom of the Chilean Supreme Court in November 2008, the case was tossed out, the lady judge was found to be correctly at law as she was, and the judgment will stand. After that, I proceeded to put all the titles of Mina Pascua into my name. Me, the person that is sued in Canada by Barrick Gold Corporation, saying that they own Mina Pascua, my name is in the titles and Barrick Gold Corporation name has never been there. Yet, Barrick sold 50% of Mina Pascua to Minera Homestead, my client, my counterpart in business prior to, and they share 50-50 Mina Pascua with Minera Homestead, a non-hedge company, so that they could take their gold and meet the hedges that they couldn't meet with Mina Pascua. So I'm very sorry, William, to hear your case that you are suffering libel because you're trying to come out with the truth, just like I am. I'm a symbol of libel and internet libel in Canada, but I am innocent. The problem is that the RCMP neglected to properly investigate the file. The courts, well, they didn't have me present there so that I could rebate the lies. And at this date, Barrick, through audacity again, somebody tampered with my computer. They put content out there in the internet. And Barrick was successful at trampling with my rights in British Columbia in the Supreme Court here by stating that I committed contempt, publishing things out of a time when a judge had restricted that thing. And so no longer Barrick has the need or will have to face having no title, commercial crimes, financial crimes, money crimes, gold crimes, because it so happened that now I am the guilty one, although I didn't do it, of publishing things while I was prohibited. So libel is an instrument of wrath by the powerful against the people who have the truth at hand and they cannot make it known. I'm tired of that in Canada.
I got a quick question for you, Jorge. Now that you are the legal owner of Mina Pascua Lama and recognized down in by the Chilean court system, the Supreme Court system down in Chile, up here in Canada, it appears that our court system is run by the select few elitist. It's not innocent until proven guilty. It's guilty until proven innocent. Here in Canada, it seems to be repeatedly seen like that. But now that you are the legal owner and Barrick Gold cannot take, according to the Chilean court system, cannot take gold out of that gold reserve, and they even, as you were saying, they sold some of it. So what are we talking from a financial standpoint, a world financial standpoint? How much, of a kick to the financial situation at this time is this going to cause? But could these companies no longer have those gold reserves that they allegedly, acquired?
Well, thanks for the question, Rich. The truth is that I contacted J.P. Morgan prior to 9/11, as you know, and I was invited to those towers. Luckily, I didn't go. Otherwise, I wouldn't be here. Number one. Number two, the mine was to be open in the year 2000, and to that mine there was a contribution of hundreds of millions of dollars by J.P. Morgan, Goldman and Sachs, Merrill Lynch, Solomon Brothers, and a last advice to them, they were short in gold non-produced at Pascua since the year 2000, about 28 billion and counting, maybe 30 billion. These are the same banks that received the 700 billion bailout. And the problem with the financial world is that there is no truth out there, because if the housing problem was really true, And the government really wanted to solve that, they would have paid everybody's mortgages and discounted them from the wages and the paychecks. But no, nobody had their house protected. Everybody went into foreclosures, and the bankers got the money. And the hedges and derivatives that they were covered at Merrill Lynch that they made a collapse is actually as well the custodian of the hedges and derivatives and minerals. And AIG, that is the insurance company behind it all, it also got bailed out. So it's very hard to discover what did create an impact, but I believe that them being short Pascua is creating ripples into the market. And when we started this fight, gold was at 260, and gold is over 900 being suppressed right now.
And also, William, now getting back to you for a brief moment, we only have about 10 more minutes left here. So could you quickly leave the listening audience with some, you know, a couple minutes of basically talking about the other authors that are involved, and, you know, and how this has also affected the publication company at this time that put your book out, how this has affected them with this lawsuit.
Well, before talking about that, I wanted to thank Jorge for his words. I think this is not only unfortunately, this is not only a Canadian issue, because there has been some cases in Europe of people actually writing books or publicly taking stands against strong private interests, and which have experienced the same type of you know, instruments. And as you say, well, for instance, ourselves, we are living this type of procedures are literally as censorship, and you know, this is to me, this is just a sophisticated tool to shut the mouth of people who have modest financial means. And you know, when these issues are bringing in the judicial area, then you have to fight within some judicial frame you're not prepared to as a citizen. And and you know, beside of that, of course, you have to have like huge financial means to be able to make your point in that context. So yeah, I think this is a very, very dangerous trend we are actually observing right now with this type of lawsuit. You know, like people call it a strategic lawsuit against public participation, and I think this is a really people should be very concerned about this lawsuits being used as a tool to actually silence and muzzle other group of citizens or writers or academics or and so on and so forth. And now talking about the consequences on the publisher, well, I mean, it's very hard for a small publishing company such as Ecosociété to have such an amount above its head. I mean, for instance, in the case of the Ontario judgment, we have asked for the judgment to be transferred from Toronto to Montreal, because we estimate that the book is in French. We are all francophone, and the book was targeted as francophones. So we said, okay, it would be better, and a case is already existing in Montreal, it would be better to transfer it in Montreal. And the court, the Ontarian court in last February declared itself competent. So, and at the end of this small trial, we have been required, as we lost it, to pay $25,000. I mean, even this small, in brackets, amount of money is very, you know, it's very problematic for a small publisher such as Ecosociété. And I know also that they now have, you know, some problem with some of their partners, furnishers, that they these people are concerned by the fact that, you know, if they are partnering with Ecosociété, there might be some problem in some very small amount of time, because we might this publisher might enter in bankruptcy, you know, very soon. So that's, you know, that's part of all these problems, these problems that are generated by such a lawsuit. There is a, you know, a diffraction of the small problems you're experiencing for us in our daily and personal life, and for an entity such as the publisher, as it's as a, you know, as a as a business actor.
Oh, I just wanted to ask Jorge a question about the slap suits. I know it's been a contentious issue lately because of, for example, Can West was suing a local activist here in Vancouver just recently. And I thought that people were pushing to change things so that these slap suits could no longer be brought on to artists and people like that. I'm not sure if you know anything about that.
Yes, I am familiar with the issue. What happened is that this is an endemic or a systemic rotted maneuvering from the powerful to shut out dissent and hopefully to kick the issues of the day 5-10 years away from today through these lengthy court processes of establishing who is right and who is wrong. It is unfortunate that the laws have been designed to protect the powerful and not the injured. So having that into consideration, you have that a ferry sunk, two parents are dead, and the kids have no money to go to court to defend their rights, and they get a settlement that is a lollipop in comparison to what they should have normally. In my case, Barry Gold Corporation tossed this kind of gag slap lawsuit in the year 2002 when I'm in the best of my mining career worldwide trying to bring in environmental mining systems into the mining community so that there could be less pollution in the world. And this corporation tainted my name and character, assassinated my name by them tossing this lawsuit of libel and defending it, quote-unquote, vigorously, just like they defended themselves against Greg Palast in the lawsuit brought about against BBC. They brought about a lawsuit against The Guardian. Harper brought a lawsuit against the Cadmans or the Liberals. And so everybody is using this famous libel tool to shut down the truth. And I agree with you that there should be some kind of correction to such.
We only have a couple minutes left, so William, could you quickly leave the listening audience with some contact information just in case anyone wants to contact you? Is there a phone number that we can call, or even if there's an email address where the listening audience might want to ask you some questions that we didn't talk about today?
Yeah, I mean, I can give you my personal email address. It's hohughi_wi, commercial A. Yahoo.fr. So that's my personal contact. You can also, through the Eco-Société website, I repeat the address. It's www.slap.ecosociete.org. And through that website, you can also contact our publisher for more informations. They would be able to provide information much on the publisher the editing problem side.
And also, Jorge, if you could quickly leave your email address with our listening audience once again. We only have about 2 minutes left.
My email is gold, goldinchile, @gmail.com.
And today's guests were Jorge Lopendia and William Sacker. William Sacker is a co-author of Noir Canada. I say to our listening audience, just go out and check it out, because what it shows the true corruption that a few elitists have done and how they are trying to attempt to cover up their darkness from the past. I also like to thank Tanya Hill for coming in and today and helping me co-host it. Do you want to leave with a couple words?
Thanks, Rich. I just wanted to thank Jorge and William for coming in.
And also, we'd like to thank Molly for coming in and being our tech today, too. So this is Co-op Radio 102.7 FM, CFRO, Monday Brown Bagger. And I'd say the listening audience, until we come back again, just get informed. Thank you very much.